We're thankful this afternoon to be together and to sing a song about Jesus and how wonderful he is, and to pray to our Heavenly Father through him, and to hear the word read to us so ably in a passage that we've considered to be important in the Old Testament, because every passage is, because it's speaking to us of God's arrangement so that people could come to him and have a relationship with him in olden days, even as he has enabled us to have a relationship with him through his son Jesus. So thank you for being here to engage in these acts of worship and to encourage one another in our faith. If you're visiting here tonight, we're really happy that you can be among us, and we pray that your time here will be well spent, lift you up, and we'll be able to glorify the God of heaven together. Well, there was a song a long time ago, The Sound of Silence, that I think Simon and Garfunkel maybe did it. It's a really beautiful song if you like popular music. Didn't necessarily make a lot of sense to me, although I think parts of it did. But nonetheless, this lesson tonight has nothing to do with that. Just thought I'd throw that out there to start with. Silence speaks. The tongue is such a powerful thing that it can be powerful even when you're not using it. James says in James chapter 3 and verse 5, the tongue is a little member that boasts great things. It's like that spark that starts a great forest fire. It's like the rudder of a ship, a small thing that turns the whole ship. It's like the bridle in a horse's mouth, a small thing that you can turn this huge animal with. So the tongue is a little member that boasts great things. It is, as we said, so powerful, it's even powerful when it's not saying anything. It speaks even when you're not using it. And it's that we want to talk about when we talk about the sounds of silence tonight. Sunday evening is a great time to come together to worship God. It's also a great time and a lesson to think about some practical things that will help us through this week. All of us are going to be using at times and not using our tongues this coming week. How are we going to do that to glorify God? How are we going to know when to be quiet to the praise of God and when to speak to the praise of God? In Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 28, there is this statement in Scripture that makes the point that I'm making, at least in a specific instance, where the wise man says, even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. Here's somebody who's a fool, but you think he's wise because he doesn't say anything. That's obviously the best thing that a fool can do, is not say anything. And he becomes wise in that. And our perception of him is wise. The text says, when he shuts his mouth, he is considered perceptive. The tongue speaks, even when it's not speaking. We see that in that passage, and we'll see it in several more. So the question is, what does the tongue say when it's not being used? What is the sound that it's making when you're not speaking? What is it saying about you? What is it saying about me? So, in the times that we're not using our tongue, when we're silent, here are some things that the tongue is saying. And some of the things it says about us might be bad things, because we're being silent when we should, perhaps, be saying something. The tongue might say, when we're not using it and silent, it might say, hey, I'm a coward. I'm not brave enough to speak. I'm not courageous enough to say something when something needs to be said. Believers who keep silent about their faith are cowards. Believers who won't talk to people about what they believe because of fear are cowards. And so if we're believers in Christ, we must speak. Paul said, I believed and therefore I spoke. We also believe, therefore we speak. But in John chapter 7, Jesus goes up to the Feast of Tabernacles, and there was a lot of interest in Jesus. A lot of people were talking about him in private. But the text tells us in John 7 and verse 13 that no one spoke openly of him for fear of the Jews. No one spoke openly. And their silence said, we're not brave enough to confess what we believe to be true about Jesus. We're not even brave enough to discuss him, because we are afraid what the leaders might do to us. In John chapter 12 and verse 42, John observes that as Jesus comes toward that last week of his life, that even among the rulers, many believed in him, but because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him lest they should be put out of the synagogue. So here are people who are afraid of what's going to happen if they start talking about Jesus. They're actually believers in Jesus, but they're not willing to talk about that. How many believers in Jesus today are not willing to say anything about him? Their silence speaks volumes about the level of their commitment, the depth of their faith, and their courage. When we run across in the New Testament people who not only believed in Jesus but had depth of conviction and courage to go with it, we find them speaking openly about Christ. The apostles spoke the world with the word with boldness in Acts chapter 4 and verse 29. And they prayed, "Lord, look on their hearts and grant to your servants that with all boldness they may speak your word." They wanted to speak it, and they went out and spoke boldly as a consequence of their prayer. The Apostle Paul certainly wasn't afraid to speak the truth of Jesus and what he believed about Jesus and what he held to be true about Jesus. Paul went to a lot of cities where he suffered harm for speaking about Jesus. When he comes to Corinth in Acts chapter 18, he's been to a bunch of places already. He's been stoned many times and suffered imprisonment and all sorts of things by the time he gets there. And in Corinth, there's a violent uprising against the word as well. But in Acts 18 and verse 9, the Lord spoke to Paul in the night by a vision and told him, "Do not be afraid, but speak. And do not keep silent." That's the Lord's expectation for all of us. No matter what the world might say, think, or do to us as a consequence of speaking about Jesus, if we're believers and we're courageous, we will speak. And if we won't, we're cowards. Sometimes then, what we're saying is, sometimes silence is not golden. It's just yellow. It's just cowardly. And we need to understand the difference between not wanting to hurt people's feelings, being kind, and just being cowardly. The world needs to hear the gospel. And if it doesn't hear it from us, it won't hear it. The Lord is counting on us to use our tongues to speak his name, to speak his truth. And we must have the courage to do that. Sometimes when we're not willing to say something connected to that, when we're not willing to say something, our tongues are saying, "Well, I consent to this, he consents to evil," because he's not rebuking it. He's not exposing it. He's not calling it out. We've seen evil things happen in our society, in the workplaces, in schools, among friends. Have we said anything about those evil things? Do we call out evil? Do we expose it when we see it? Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 11, "Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them." So you have two options there. You know, there's some things you might have a lot of different options in. You have two options here. You can either have fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, or you can expose them. So there's not really a middle ground that Paul gives you. You're either light or darkness. That's the context. It's either light or darkness. There's no in between here. We're going to have fellowship with darkness, or we're going to expose the darkness. We're going to be the light, or we're going to be the darkness. And when we're silent about evil deeds, we are the darkness, and we're consenting to the evil. We're having fellowship with the evil by our silence. There are, as we've said, a lot of wicked things in this world. We don't have to pass judgment on everyone and everything that happens. But it's not right for people who are people of God to pretend that evil is good, or to let it go as if it were nothing in God's sight for evil to occur. Sometimes when we keep silent, our silent tongue may be saying, I'm not interested in genuine dialogue. There are those, sometimes among Christians, sometimes people in the world, who are willing to talk a lot about things as long as they're the ones controlling the conversation. But when it gets to genuine dialogue, where you have to have an exchange of ideas, and maybe even defend your faith about something in some detail, then we want to shut off communication. Then we're not willing to say anything because we're not genuine about our faith, about our beliefs, about standing for the truth. We're afraid that we'll be shown up, that what we think to be true will be demonstrated to be false, that we'll be embarrassed in a conversation. And so we're not interested in real genuine dialogue about differences at times. It's the attitude of some of the leaders of the Jews that Jesus ran across multiple times. You know, they were willing to condemn him for any number of things. And yet, in certain circumstances, they wouldn't say anything. Let me give you a couple of examples of that. In Mark chapter 3 and verse 2, he goes into a synagogue, and it says, and they watch him closely, whether he would heal on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. So they're just looking for an opportunity to say something bad. But he says to a man with a withered hand, step forward. And then he said to the people who are watching, he asked them before he heals the man, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to evil, to save a life or to kill? And they kept silent. See, here is where you could discuss the issue. Here is where you could have a genuine dialogue about whether healing on the Sabbath was right or wrong. Jesus is inviting it before he heals the man. But that's not what they want. They don't want a genuine dialogue. They're being quiet, so he'll do something then that they can point their finger at. They don't want that actual fair debate. The open conversation that we need about right and wrong. They just want to point their finger at somebody. And we have a lot of folks in the world like that today. And some of them are Christians. There are a lot of them in the world, though. Similar happening in Luke chapter 14. Jesus goes in, invited to a supper, and there was a certain man before him who had dropsy. Jesus spoke to the lawyers and the Pharisees, saying, just like he did in Mark, he speaks to the lawyers and the Pharisees, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? But they kept silent. Same exact situation. Not really wanting to talk about it, only wanting to be judgmental and spout their viewpoint. Now, I'll just tell you, if you're on social media, we see this kind of thing a lot. A lot. We see people wanting to pontificate and say a lot, but when it comes to really having a discussion about anything, that's usually not a fair thing on social media. And frankly, I think most of us realize social media is not really the place to have a discussion most of the time about most things. It just doesn't seem to work well. Sometimes being silent says, you know what? I don't care about your soul. In Ezekiel chapter 33, Ezekiel was to be a spokesman for God. He was to be a watchman. And he was to sound the alarm as people were heading into evil and doing things that displeased God. In Ezekiel 33 and verse 7, God speaks to him as the Son of Man, as he calls him throughout the book of Ezekiel. He says, so you, Son of Man, I have made a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore, you shall hear a word from my mouth and warn them for me. When I say to the wicked, O wicked man, you shall surely die, and you do not speak to warn the wicked from his way, that wicked man shall surely die in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at your hand. Because why? Because you did not speak. Because you kept silent when he needed to be warned. We also are watchmen. We are to watch. I don't know how many times Jesus said that. How many times do the apostles say that? How many times are we told in the New Testament to watch and to be watchful, not only for ourselves, but for others, for false doctrine, for people wandering off into sin. We're told if someone sins, we're to rebuke them. All of that requires speaking. We see it, we say something about it. If we don't do that, do we really care about people's souls? And won't God hold us accountable for them not hearing the warning? Their blood will be on our hands, in the language that he uses to speak to Ezekiel. In Acts chapter 20, as Paul is talking there to the elders who'd come to meet him from Ephesus, he says, "I testify to you this day," verse 26, "I testify to you this day that I am innocent from the blood of all men, for I have not shunned to declare to you the whole counsel of God. I've spoken the whole counsel of God. I've warned you. I've told you. You can't look at me and say, you didn't tell me. I was going the wrong way. You didn't say anything. You never mentioned him to me." Nobody's going to say that to Paul. James writes in James chapter 5 and verse 19, "Brethren, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sins." It seems to me in James 5 verses 19 and 20, we're in substance being given the same charge that Ezekiel was given. That we have the ability to turn people back from sin and save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sins. Ezekiel had that same opportunity to warn people. And we must do that. And our silence says, we don't really care about souls. Maybe we're too fearful. Maybe we're too apathetic. Whatever it might be. But that silence says a lot of bad things, doesn't it? And I don't think that's all of them, but it's a good smattering. We should then think about, why am I being quiet now? Are there times when you feel like you ought to say something, but you don't? Some of those times you should, some of them you shouldn't, but we're looking at some times where you definitely should. You definitely should say something. On the other hand, sometimes your silence does say good things about you. For instance, it might say that you want to listen. People have a real hard time speaking and listening at the same time. It's been noted that God gave us two ears and one mouth. Maybe we should use our ears twice as much as our mouth. Something like that. So, Acts 15 and verse 12, in a just statement about what's happening here in that meeting in Jerusalem, it says that all the multitude kept silent and listened to Barnabas and Paul. So, I teach school, as most of you know. Been teaching just one Bible class for a long time. And I can really tell when my students aren't listening. It's not even a special skill. Many of you have been my students. I could tell when you aren't listening. You know, when your head is turned and you're talking to somebody over here, you're not listening to me. When everybody in the class is doing that and I'm up in front talking, you're not listening to me. I can tell that. You know, I may be slow, but I catch on to things like that. Because you're using your mouth, you can't be listening. I remember being at Florida College years ago, and we had a teacher. He was maybe one of the best teachers I've ever had in my life. His name was John Clark, and he was worth listening to. We got in class one day, I don't know if it was springtime or what, but we were kind of wired and everybody was talking and he was trying to deliver the lecture up front and nobody was listening. And he knew that nobody was listening. He was a smart man, and so he stopped talking and everybody just kept on talking. And finally, there was a table up in front of the class. He jumped up on top of the table and stood up and started waving to everybody to get everybody's attention, because he knew they weren't listening as they were talking. Sometimes we're so anxious to say something that we don't listen to the other person. And in some conversations, the best thing that we can do is not to speak. To just let the other person say what they need to say. Sometimes in conversations, when somebody's trying to teach us something, same thing. We don't need to be defensive. We don't need to tell our side of the story. We don't need to say what we know about it. We need to learn something. And we can if we'll listen. Sometimes our silence says a lot about how much we want to learn. Because we can't learn when we're talking. That's so important to understand. James says in James 1 and verse 19, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath." Sometimes when we keep silent, we're saying about ourselves, our tongue is saying about us by its silence, "I don't want to sin with my tongue." So sure enough, the more we talk, the more we're likely to sin with our tongues. Proverbs 10 and verse 19, "In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise." And that's true whether you're speaking words in casual conversation, whether you're using words on social media, or on a telephone call, whatever it might be. Anytime you're using a lot of words, there's always a greater likelihood that sin could be involved. So the instructions we have there in Proverbs 10 and verse 19, I do believe would apply to words that we type or text. We can sin through our fingers as well as we can our mouth, I suppose, in that sense. But the tongue is a powerful evil, and it needs to be controlled at all times. James describes it this way. I quoted James 3 a little bit earlier, but let's look at James 3, verses 6 through 8, where he's in this discussion of the powerful evil of the tongue and the need to bridle it. He says, "The tongue is a fire." This is James 3 and verse 6. "The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity." There's just a whole world of sin that can be generated by the tongue. "The tongue is so set in our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it itself is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil. It is full of deadly poison." An unruly evil. It's something that you cannot rule. Something that you cannot tame. Something that you cannot ever turn your back on. The tongue cannot be tamed. You know, if an animal is tame, you can turn your back on it. You can trust it. But if it's a wild animal, don't turn your back on it. If it's an untamed animal, don't leave it alone by itself and expect it to behave. It won't. You cannot turn your back on your tongue. It cannot be trusted. You must not let it be free to do whatever it wants. And yet, how often do we speak and speak and speak without thinking? We just let our tongue ramble. That's always dangerous. Sometimes silence just says, "I don't want to do that. I don't want to sin with my tongue." In Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 2, there Solomon says, "Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven and you are on earth, therefore let your words be few." Especially in the presence of God, but in a sense we're in the presence of God at all times. Let's let our words be few and not utter anything hastily before Him. Sometimes silence can say something positive in that it says we're willing to suffer with somebody. There's that poignant moment in the book of Job where Job has just been through it all. He's lost everything. As we talked a little bit about this morning, he's lost his children. He's lost his wealth. He's lost his health. And his friends come to visit him in Job chapter 2. And they're really not very good friends. They're not very good comforters, as it turns out. The best thing they do in the whole story is the first thing they do. They come, it says in chapter 2 and verse 13, they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his grief was very great. And they were just sitting there in grief with him, their presence comforting him. It is often the case that words fail us in times when we're trying to comfort somebody in times of grief or loss or sickness or pain. And I don't know about you, but words often fail me in those situations. And rather than maybe trying to think up something to say, maybe just being there, is what we ought to do. Lastly, as we think about what our silence might say, it just might say that we want to be like Jesus. We think of Jesus as being a great communicator, and he was, and he is. He's the master teacher, best teacher who ever walked the face of the earth. He knew how to communicate his message. Of course, even with that great skill, he did not always get the message across because of people who were blinded, people who were prejudiced, people who had agendas of their own. When it came, though, to coming to his own defense, there are times when he did not do that. There were times when he was silent and let his accusers and his detractors have the last word. Especially more and more so, of course, as he approached the cross. We see multiple instances of this. I don't know about you, but the natural inclination of most of us, isn't it, when we are attacked or somebody says things that are meant to be insulting or detracting, the natural inclination is to defend ourselves, to say something back. When we are, particularly when we're insulted or slandered, we think, well, we've got to respond to that. But actually, we don't. And sometimes, maybe most of the time, silence is more powerful. Because silence speaks to us of integrity, of innocence. It speaks to us of maybe having no need to answer a ridiculous accusation or being called a name that you know is not true. In Isaiah 53 and verse 7, talking about the Messiah to come, of course, Isaiah says that he was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, as a sheep before its shearers is silent. So he opened not his mouth. And there are, as we noted a minute ago, multiple instances of this, particularly as he approaches the cross. In Matthew 26, in verse 62, he's before the high priest. The high priest arose and said to him, "Do you answer nothing? What is this that these men are testifying against you?" But Jesus kept silent. The high priest answered and said to him, "I put you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God." So he's trying to, I don't know if you've ever thought about what the high priest is trying to do there. You ever imagine that somebody could force you to be under oath, whether you consent to it or not? I'm putting you under oath. You haven't agreed to be under oath. You haven't said you'll tell the truth, but I'm putting you under oath. You know, that's how desperate the high priest was to get him to say something that would condemn himself. But he doesn't do it. In the morning, that same morning, in Mark 15, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and they bound Jesus and they led him away and delivered him to Pilate. And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered to him, "It is as you say." The chief priests accused him of many things, but he answered nothing. Pilate asked him again, saying, "Do you answer nothing? See how many things they testify against you?" But Jesus still answered nothing. And Pilate marveled. He answered nothing. Repeatedly. He was on the cross, and people were saying awful things about him. And he didn't answer. They reviled him. He didn't revile them. His silence speaks volumes to us about his character. And I want to tell you tonight, this is something we need to learn about Jesus if we're going to be his followers. There are just lots of times when we do not need to rise to our own defense. I know we think we do, but many times we don't. It takes wisdom to know when, I suppose. But in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21, to this you were called because Jesus suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow in his steps, an example about how to suffer. He committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. As David did in dealing with Shammai, as Jesus does in dealing with those who are reviling him on the cross, and other people in the Old Testament and New Testament, people of faith, people who are committed to God, they knew they didn't have to justify themselves or defend themselves to every human being on earth. If they were right with God, they were right. They committed themselves to him who judges righteously. Let God be the judge. And let's go on and just live a righteous life and not be pulled down into name-calling and bitterness. Let those who suffer according to the will of God commit their souls in him, to him, in doing good. That's the challenge of 1 Peter 4:19. So I thank you for your good attention tonight. You've sat silently for the most part, and I think that says something good about you. I think many of you were listening, and I hope that these are things you can take with you this week and thoughtfully apply them to a number of circumstances in life that you will face this week. I hope that this will help us be more and more Christ-like. There is cowardly silence, and there is courageous speech. And there is courageous silence, and there is cowardly speech. And we pray for the wisdom to know the difference. The world does not know the difference. I'll guarantee you that. But followers of Jesus must know the difference. Let's commit ourselves to him in doing good. And let's commit our tongues to him in saying and sometimes not saying what is right and what is wrong. God bless us in that pursuit. If there's one here this evening subject to the invitation of Christ, we offer that now on his behalf. He said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." If you're laden tonight, if you have a burden that you need to share, if it's a problem in your life you need prayer about, if it's a sin in your life you need to confess, if it's a life that you need to give to Jesus, now would be a great time to do that. We'd ask you to come while we stand and sing.